Hughes. Good morning, committee members. We have been, Representative Farr had a little problem with some construction, so we were waiting for her arrival, and we're happy to do that. So we will open an informational meeting and turn it over to Representative Farr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, it's good to see familiar faces. Lots of people I haven't seen in a while. Good to be back. With me this morning is Jim Seabury, who's been very involved in a neighborhood organization in Santa Clara, which is in a part of Eugene that I represent. And I forgot to state my name for the record. For the record, my name is Debbie Farr, State Representative, District 14. Jim has for many years been involved in the fight against annexation and has formed a very effective neighborhood organization that is well known throughout the community. And I've been working with Jim and with other residents of Santa Clara. And just to give you a little bit of history, and I'm going to turn it over to Jim because he knows a lot more about that particular fight and the residents there because he used to live in that part of the district. It really started for me during my door-to-door effort and going out and talking to residents to find out how annexation was affecting them. And I didn't talk to a single resident in Santa Clara that was in favor of being annexed into the city. And of course, you probably understand that the main reason for that is their property tax liability would increase, in many cases, double. For a huge percentage of the residents that live in Santa Clara, the unannexed portion, they're elderly, senior citizens that live on a fixed income. They own their home. They are looking at, with an increase in their property tax liability, a greater monthly output than their house payment was. And without seeing the increase in money coming in, but the potential increase of money going out, it makes it very difficult for them to believe that they would continue to live in their homes. So for me, as a legislator, I felt there was a potential fix, something that I could do to help them stay in their homes and give them the security and knowing that they could do that. But before I talk about my legislative concept, I want to give the floor to Jim Seabury and let him tell you a little bit about himself and what he's done.
My name is Jim Seabury, 1375 Green Acres, mobile home space number 162. Before I can get started here, I have to pay a debt of gratitude to this committee. I think you gentlemen and gentleladies have performed superbly for people throughout the state of Oregon, especially as it affects people, retired people, as it affected me severely. I had an opportunity just prior to calling to order of this committee to Representative Garrard, who chairs the committee. We were standing over by the door, and I got into a short conversation with him and explained to him that I'm a former director of data processing for Teledyne. Teledyne owned 44 companies. And we used to close our books, first one on the New York Stock Exchange, by the sixth day of January of each and every year. We were the first one in on a consolidated statement. When I retired in 1998, I moved to Oregon. And my wife and I bought a home in Santa Clara, the unincorporated area. We could afford it. What did I do? I did exactly for our household what I did for Teledyne and for even myself when I was in business for over 10 years in Southern California. And that was to be able to control our expenditures versus our income. With even an actual to-date budget to actual. And having some 40 years of experience and working my way toward director of data processing, I worked through the ranks of programming and things like that. So I wrote my own programs. To this day, I can close and get my electrical statement by going out and reading my meter, and it projects it out. If I keep the present habit, what's going to happen when I get 30 days down the road and get the bill? Now to the subject at hand, and that was annexation. I'm now living in the city of Eugene. I have nothing against government. And I guess I feel that way because until the past few years, I've been able to understand government. But as a homeowner, what I experienced in Santa Clara finally put me in a position of having to make a decision. I'm not too solid of financial data to support why I was doing this, except a gut feeling. And we were forced to go and sell our gorgeous home in the non-incorporated part of Santa Clara. Because if we were annexed in, I couldn't afford, literally, to double my taxes almost. It would have gone from 1810 a year to 3200. So we sold our home. Luckily, I didn't think for a minute that we were going to make it, but we did sell the home. And we're now in the process of living in a mobile home, which is great. We're doing some improvements to it. It's looking great. But there's an unfairness, and the unfairness is that you can't foresee, you can't tell. The superfluous street annexations are reaching out with no cause at all, except to take away, as I see it, a person's right to vote on annexation. They say that doesn't affect you. Well, I can't think of anything that affects you more than to take away a person's vote, regardless of what it might be. If it's government that is doing this to you, it needs to be looked at. And I think that the bill that you have before you, and I perused one of them, that Representative Ackerman has done some work on, it's superb. It's that simple. That takes it out to, that will take it if it passes, carries, and everything goes the way that we hope it does. And I'm sure that these representatives are on the right track. And I know that Debbie Farr has got some stuff that's right on line also. So if there's any questions, I'd be happy to explain. Thank you.
Any questions from the committee? Mr. Seabury. Representative?
Well, I want to thank the chair as well, because I know that Representative Garrard has been involved in the annexation issue for quite some time, and many of you sitting on the committee have as well. During the last legislative session, we passed legislation that would prohibit cities from annexing unless there was a majority vote of those residents to be annexed. But what is happening in Eugene is called island annexation, and so the city is surrounding property on three sides and then incorporating that property into the city and their tax base. And I certainly understand the need for a strong tax base to pay for city services. But as Mr. Seabury said, it's an issue of fairness for the residents that live in Santa Clara who bought that property in good faith. And for me, and my reasoning is I want everyone to feel that they can stay in their homes and live there as long as they want. So I'm working with Harrison Legislative Council, and he was not able to complete a draft in time for me to present that to the committee, but as soon as I have a draft available, I'll be forwarding it to you so that you can give it to each committee member. But my legislative concept was for a homeowner to be annexed into the city, they would either have to sell or transfer the title of their property, which would give a homeowner the security of knowing that they could stay in their home. We haven't worked out all of the details, but in talking with Harrison this morning, one of his suggestions would be that either the seller or the title company would provide the information about the sale to the city, and so they would know that that property could be annexed at that time. Either that, or if the property were already annexed, the tax base would remain the same until the property was sold or transferred. So, you know, what that would do and what it would have done for Jim and his wife Elizabeth is it would have given them the security of knowing they could have stayed in their home for as long as they wanted to. Typically, younger families will sell their property and move into a different area of the city, and I don't have those statistics. I'm sure if there's anyone here from the realtors, they could give us some pretty clear data to support that most people don't stay in their homes for, you know, many years.
Seven years,
great. Thank you, Representative Esquivel. However, the residents that I have talked with that are truly worried about losing their homes have lived in their homes for many years, quite a number of them for 30 to 40 years. And for me, as their state representative, I believe that they should have the security of knowing that they can stay in their homes and feel that they can live out their lives there until circumstances would change. So I appreciate the committee listening to me this morning and my testimony, and I apologize again that I don't have a draft to present, but I will have that very soon, and we can move forward.
Well, this has moved forward very quickly. We invited Representative Farr to be here this morning because we wanted to get this issue on the committee's radar for the upcoming session. And Representative Ackerman has stepped forward, and when we get into a work session this morning, has a proposed LC draft that may or may not address all of the issues that you have, but we'll have an opportunity to very briefly take a look at his draft. But things have moved quickly. The committee is well-versed, having gone through Beaverton and Tigard. We're now ready for Eugene, I guess. So we thank Jim for coming this morning and Representative Farr.
Thank you.
Any other questions at all? Thank you both very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Barr.
Thank you. I just needed to clarify in my mind. Now, you're saying that if an area is annexed, if a person doesn't want to be, it would only... maybe you should explain it to me again. On sale or transfer of the property. And then you also talked about not the taxes won't raise.
Well, there were...
But if they don't have to sell or transfer, I mean, why is that piece in there?
Well, I probably didn't do a very good job explaining it, and Harris and I have talked about two different drafts, really, two different ideas or concepts. And one would be if they were annexed into the city, their property taxes wouldn't raise until they sold or transferred the property. That would be one approach. The other approach would be that they couldn't be annexed until the sale or transfer. In looking at both, I think that the most important thing that we need to address is the cost of setting up something that is, you know, going to really be able to monitor that process. And so those are some things that I'm trusting legislative counsel will be able to work out for me.
Representative, have you had a chance to look at LC 1245, Representative Ackerman's?
I haven't. I did speak with Representative Ackerman, and I believe that the two drafts, his draft and my concept, are different. But certainly I would support whatever he's introducing that's going to provide the same type of relief to the residents of Santa Clara.
Very good.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Sorry. I guess kind of in a devil's advocate role, and I guess maybe even to Jim, do you feel that if this area was annexed, you wouldn't necessarily be getting any more services anyway? Or do you think that if you were, you would have an obligation to pay for extra services that you would gain?
I think it goes a little farther than that. Cities, in order to grow within their urban growth boundary, have and rightfully so, they contract through an intergovernmental agreement for the services of certain districts that may be present in the unincorporated areas to serve service, the new construction, would in the case of Eugene, building permits are issued by the city of Eugene inside the unincorporated area. Therefore, in order for the city to do these spot annexations and provide services to those entities, to those homes, they have intergovernmental agreements, and they continue to expand their buildable capabilities of the unincorporated area based upon the good services that these districts are providing. And in the metro plan, it specifically speaks of the goodness of all of these districts and how great that they can provide those services under contract. So they're not missing these services. What they're doing is they're just spot annexing everything and making it a terrible situation. Now then they're doing superfluous street annexations in an attempt to take away people's vote. It is that simple. I had one thing, and you mentioned it, and that was on Representative Farr's anticipated submittal to you of her plan, and that was on the fixing if I'm reading it right, and I think I am, mentally reading it right, and that is that the property tax would be fixed for at the time of the senior citizen buying his home. I don't know if it's going to be just senior citizens buying their homes, but I would think so, maybe. And I might also think that maybe those senior citizens should be residents of Oregon for a period of X years, be it 3 or 5 years, before they're entitled to that. It could be retroactive to the time that they moved here, but they must be resident there in the home, things like that. So there's some goodness that should come out of this, and I think that I believe in holding people responsible for their actions that they did with knowledge. If they buy a house, then that property tax base, then if they made mistakes, that's their bag to carry. But if they are frugal and do things properly, they should be able to, as indicated by Rep. Farr, live their life out in their home.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Representative Greenland.
Yeah, I'd like to ask a question as well. The idea that property tax would double was a number we heard from 1,800 to 3,600 something. Does Measure 5 and Measure 50 apply in that part of Oregon?
You know,
do we have a 1.5% property tax limitation?
I'm not that familiar with 5 and 50, and I'll be very honest with you. Most people that don't deal with those things every day don't really read them that well. But I can say that... I think I can, if I can get past this gray hair. and I can't. Okay? No, I'm not going to hold you up your time. But I had an answer for you, and it was timely and appropriate, but I can't remember.
If I can follow on that. My understanding in Beaverton, where the same situation applies, with water and sewer and lighting, and there's some police protection under the sheriff, and parks are all covered under special service districts. Going into a city would add about $500 per 100,000 assessed value of a house for the planning services and for increased police protection. But it does seem to me that when we're running against a 1.5% property tax limitation, I mean, my assumption is that you would be banging against that. I mean, Representative Barr may have some sense of that, about that 1.5% to begin with, in the sense that there are areas that are significantly lower than 1.5%, say 0.75%, so that it could actually double and still saying the 1.5% property tax limitation strikes me as a little unusual.
Might have that though comes through bonds that have been elected, that have been passed by the people within the city. And that's how you pick up an awful lot of the doubling of your property taxes. That's what would have happened to me. That's what the difference is.
I might also add, if I may, that we have a number of city bonds on the ballot this November that will increase property taxes for all of us that live within the city limits.
You know, senior citizens aren't a majority of the people in the city. And yet if they get annexed in, then they're going to have to pick up all of that. Even if they were in, they wouldn't be able to vote enough to probably sustain themselves from the cost of something passing of that nature. That's why I like the consideration of the senior citizens with a fixed income. They're living on fixed incomes. Why can't we do that for them?
And I might add
one more thing.
Oh, if I may just interject, and you know, that would include members of our disabled population as well. Anyone who's subject to a limited amount of dollars coming in monthly.
Representative?
In my area, there's a low-income senior citizens can defer their property tax as a lien on the house. I think that's a statewide program.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, is that something that links into this? I mean, if we're talking about low-income senior citizens,
I'm not real fond of deferred income taxes. What are you really doing? You're really taking it away from the estate of the people.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me smacks of something that is not proper.
Well, we sell reverse mortgage annuities all the time, which does exactly that.
Well, that's available, and if the individual wishes to do that, that's fine. But when they get into it's a long story.
Representative Ackerman.
I just have a question and statement. First, as representative, does your bill only take into consideration island annexations, or would it be all annexations with respect to people that have lower incomes?
Well, again, I'm still working on this with Harrison, but I assumed that it would be island annexations.
Okay. And if I could just...
Or cherry stem annexations, because they're similar but a little different.
I just wanted to follow up on Mr. Seabury's comment. The question was, in his situation, I think, would you gain anything from the city by annexing to the city from the county? And he and I live in the same general region, where I'm in an unincorporated area of the city of Eugene, as is he. And if annexation took place, it's my opinion that we gain nothing except a transfer of services, police services, from the county to the city. We're already under a regional sewer system. We're already served by a fire through special districts, as well as recreation in many of the areas where we live there. As I said, the police services would merely shift from the city to the county, or from the county to the city, and we're served by a regional electrical system. So we really don't gain anything more in getting any more urbanized services, except if you're in the city, you get a free library card. If you're not in the city, you don't. So it's about a $65 deal.
And
I make that statement because that's my situation, and I know Mr. Seabury and I are similarly situated in terms of where we live.
That's a good statement, and I might add that what I hear from residents there is that it would be a very expensive library card for them.
It would be, because your tax is going to be double, as Mr. Seabury indicates. In his instance, it could be upwards to $1,800. And some of the other areas, because some of the special service districts would be absorbed within the annexation process. We would not have that.
Yeah. Well, as Rep. Ackerman well knows, Santa Clara Fire District was... They're no longer on an IGA because a lot of us that lived in the unincorporated area went to our fire board and said, look, you're servicing under these homes that are actually in the city out here for a rate of about 87 cents per thousand. We pay $1.05 per thousand to this board for our services. So we don't want you to do that anymore. And that's what happened. The contract was broken. So the actual cost for fire service would probably be in the city, as Rep. Ackerman may well know, probably impact upon us, if we were annexed in, at about $2.10 per thousand for fire services. If you can find out exactly where the accounting is for that.
Representative Esquivel.
Maybe you could help me out here a little bit. How does Eugene do its annexation process? I'm having trouble following this because you're talking about an entity that's evidently force just annexing people, and yet you're talking about islands. So if they were going to force annex, they would make a broad brush approach here and do everything. So I'm confused. Is it a voluntary annexation process with a public hearing, or what is it?
Rep. Esquivel?
That's correct.
There's a thing called a boundary commission. And there's also a law that governs the annexation of streets. There is also law that governs annexation of property in what boundaries change. But there's no real law that I can find that says that you can couple streets to the applicant's voluntary annexation of his property. We're not against voluntary annexation of property at all. Not at all. That's anybody's right in this country to do. And I tried to sort of get that message across today, that it's honesty in government that we strive for all people. And then we can be proud of our cities and our counties. And we are. But we have to maintain it and correct it when it's wrong. The Boundary Commission, and there's also a thing known as the Metro Plan. I'll get back to that, and that's a little bit of government from here, and you build this little group of bureaucrats that say, well, we have to do it that way because, or we're doing it that way because this says that we'll do it that way. Well, that says we didn't vote on that. Okay, and it sort of evolved. And we've got these little bureaucracies being built. It even happens in your community organizations. They'll listen to the community organization, but they won't listen to the people that, and I'm speaking government, but they won't listen to the people that live in the neighborhoods when you go to them for the public hearings. Well, that's a little bureaucracy, and then they maintain control of the community organizations. The Boundary Commission has permitted for somehow to couple streets with they piggyback it on the back of the voluntary annexation application. And in one particular case, I actually spoke with St. Vincent de Paul, who had purchased a property with a home on it. They were going to subdivide it and build one on the, so they'd have it proof of sale to low-cost owners. And that sounds great. But the city said, well, can we take East Hillcrest Drive and put it on your application and process it through? I said, well, we don't want to make any enemies. And by the way, create 92 islands in doing it. And the person from St. Vincent de Paul said, well, we don't want to be cause problems for the residents. And I said, well, that could hold up your application. It would negate its expedited process by the Boundary Commission. I said, well, then I guess maybe we should do that. So the city puts it on the back of the application and shoots it through. When we go down to give public hearing, we may as well be home talking to our wives, because they'll tell us that we don't even have a right to object to the proposed street annexation, because we're not affected. We may be one of the 92 homes. We're not affected. You're going to encircle us. You're going to take our vote away. So I believe that that this is where the problem lies, is that they're taking and they're abusing two laws. They're abusing the law of the voluntary annexation person. They're abusing the laws of the street annexation process by putting them together and keeping the public's hearing for naught. It doesn't make sense. And then we go to some of our elected representatives and we say, hey, you've got to go there and testify on this with hopes that they'll do it. But there, we the people do have a vote. Thank gosh for that. But we should be able to simplify this a little.
Did you get your question answered?
So do they voluntary annex or... do they have a criteria? Example, you have to be contiguous to the city in order before you can initiate an annexation process?
The Boundary Commission tells us that's not true. I've asked that question several times because they keep saying in support of the Boundary Commission to accept this, they will... In their preamble, the staff, city staff, will come through and give testimony that this is a contiguous annexation, you know. And I, next public hearing, I hear this is a non-contiguous annexation. So I asked the executive officer of the Boundary Commission, and I guess we mentioned names around here, Paula Taylor. Paula, I'm hearing it. On this public hearing that this is non-contiguous, and I'm hearing on this one that it's contiguous. I said, is there some law I'm missing here that I'm not reading properly? Mr. Esquivel, that was my question to them, the very question you ask of me. And Paula Taylor said that wasn't necessary. But I read the law, and I read it that it is necessary. But I don't have the funds to go and get a lawyer. You know how many people are in that same boat? We just can't go pick up a lawyer and bring a case against people. That's why we're here.
Representative Ackerman, did you have a comment?
Well, just maybe on a clarification. I live in the area, so I kind of know how it's happening. If you want to get a building permit, you must annex to the city, all right? You must annex. Now, all this land that we're talking about is within the urban growth boundary. So what has happened is there's been a patchwork of annexations as people have come in voluntarily because they want a building permit to develop their property. This could be building a single residence family, or it could be developing a regional shopping center. So that's why you have this patchwork of unincorporated areas. Most of the older homes, like ours, don't have any reason to annex because we're not developing our property yet. So that creates a patchwork process. What's further happened is that the city wants to incorporate these areas into the city of Eugene, and they can do so by the island annexation, meaning that once the city has expanded into an area and contiguously surrounds a tract, like the whole of a donut, then that they can annex that without a vote of the people. That's island annexation. Now that involves contiguous property surrounding a unincorporated area. The perversion of that is they don't annex the contiguous property, they annex the county roads. And once they find a circle of county roads to annex within the city, then the people that are within the donut or within the circle are forced into the city through annexation without a vote. That will get to my bill, but that's basically how they've evolved this over time.
Representative?
Basically what they did in Beaverton. That's exactly what they did in Beaverton.
Yeah.
So it's more or less, in my opinion, a misuse of the system. That's my opinion.
I just have one more comment. During the period of time that I served on the city council in Springfield, we looked at annexation. We did the numbers, determined that there was no way that the revenue that we brought in was going to cover the cost of the annexation, so it was tabled at that point. But we did also find that especially the fire services that we were contracting out to other agencies to provide for the urban or the urban growth boundary areas really weren't. I mean, we were subsidizing them. We weren't charging them enough, whether it was just because it had raised over a period of time and their rates hadn't raised with that. So there definitely can be a difference. I don't know if they've fixed that yet or not. But, I mean, there are some legitimate reasons why it could be costing city residents more than the non-city residents.
Representative Greenlee.
Yeah, there was a lot of discussion in Washington County of the fact that the non-city residents were subsidizing, that the city residents were subsidizing the non-city residents. And near as I understand the study that was done, although we haven't seen all the pieces of it, the fact wasn't true, that the people who are in urban non-urban unincorporated areas, in fact, are subsidizing the city to a certain extent. They're both subsidizing the people who live in rural parts of the county, because that's a much more difficult place to serve. And I also wanted to comment on all these different laws. There are, in fact, 14 different ways to annex property, and they come under various statutes. I think we straightened out with 2484 in the last session that Mr. Chair sponsored the annexation problems under ORS 195. But what we're talking about here are annexations under ORS 222, and particularly 222750, that will be amended by this LC 1245. If you feel confused by it, you come by that confusion honestly. It's a pretty confusing area.
Representative Esquivel.
You know, I look at these things. I look what happened up at Bull Mountain, up in the Tigard area, and I look what's struggling here. Would it be some way to where municipalities could have jurisdiction over their urban growth boundary, where they would issue permits? You wouldn't have to necessarily be part of the city, but you'd have to build city codes and have a future consent for annexation when the city became contiguous to your property. Wouldn't that resolve a lot of these issues? Now, I just said a lot. I covered a lot of territory just then. Well, what I'm saying is, you have your urban growth boundary. The municipality takes over the jurisdiction and the building in the urban growth boundary with the consent of the county, because, of course, the county actually has control of that. They could issue permits with a contract annexation. When you became contiguous to the city, you would automatically annex into the city with the building permit. Wouldn't that simplify this a lot?
A quick response.
Sure. Contiguous to street or contiguous to property? City property is the street.
Yes, I'm well aware of that.
If that's what you're saying, then I would think not.
Well, but you've gotten a building permit. See, we're talking about two types of people here. We're talking about people that aren't building, and we're talking about people that want to develop their property.
But I'm only addressing superfluous streets beyond the property that's being developed. There would be no problem if it was only the portion of the street in front of the home that's being either built or added to, and things like that, where the permits were applicable.
Representative Farr, Mr. Seabury, thank you for your appearance here this morning.
Thank you for inviting me. I
appreciate the dialogue, and it's been obvious to this committee that our annexation laws in this state are quite antiquated, need to be reviewed and renewed and re-looked at. But we thank you for bringing the Santa Clara situation before the committee, and we'll be in hopes that whether it be Representative Farr's future legislation or Representative Ackerman's draft today, that we'll begin to move in the right direction. So thank you both.
Thank the committee, and keep up the good work.
Okay, thank you. We will close the informational meeting on the Santa Clara station. Don, are you in any kind of time thing? Do you want to... We can...
He's such a good guy.
You're such a good guy, yes. Well, since we've been on the subject of annexation, let's stay there. And we'll open a work session on two LCs, 1245 and 1445. And since we've had the discussion on annexation, let's consider LC 1245 first. And I'll ask Representative Ackerman to bound down to the other side over there, if you will, or you can say where you are, Bob, and explain.
No, I don't mind taking it.
Okay.
Taking a stand.
Yeah, take the stand. And while you're doing that, I'll point out how pleased the committee is to have Representative Sumner here today.
Thank you.
And how goes the battle, my friend?
We're winning.
Good.
Absolutely.
And that's
our
good.
Our hearts and our prayers are with you.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Is Don going to read 1445 to us? I just want to be prepared to leave if that's what's happening.
You all have already read it already.
I think the committee will make a statement that we do not want any kind of script read to us. You ready, Bob?
Mr. Chair, before I take the witness chair, I'd like to make a motion.
Certainly.
And that is that I move that LC 1245, dated October 9, 2006, be introduced as a committee bill, and maybe that will open the matter for discussion.
Representative Ackerman has moved that LC 1245, dated October 9th, be introduced as a committee bill. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, speak away, Representative.
Thank you, yeah. Mr. Chair, and members of the
thing. That would be okay.
Yeah, you can read the whole thing.
I will not read it. I will paraphrase it, okay? And because it's only two pages. My concern was with the specific abuses of so-called island annexation. I think you've heard some of the parameters of that, but just to repeat it briefly, it's a situation where urbanization is... coming into an area, property is being developed, and properties will become annexed as the urbanization proceeds. And sometimes through that urbanization process, pockets of property will develop that are not within the city, they are still within the county. And when there is contiguous property that surrounds these holes, you might say, island annexation as allowed in ORS 222.70750 can take place without a vote of the people. These pieces of property come in. I think that it was originally intended that or foreseen that these little holes of unannexed property would be relatively small, and it would be those that would be skipped over by the urbanization process over time. Perhaps that's well and good, but the cities in their zeal to obtain more annexed property have come up with a scheme whereby they will annex county roads. Not contiguous property, not homeowners' property, but they will annex roads, and they will form a circle with these annexation of county roads to bring the road into the city, thereby creating a huge hole of annexed property, and then declare that this unannexed property is subject to island annexation, can be brought into the city, and without a vote of the affected people. Now, of the 13 or so processes by which annexation can take place, whether it's voluntary annexation or a forced type annexation, there's usually a vote of the people to approve annexation. In this case, island annexation can't take place without a vote of the people or without any standards or without any hearings taking place. So it was my idea, particularly after I saw the annexation report at the last meeting, was to try to not eliminate island annexation, but to set up certain parameters. And what this bill does is does not allow the right-of-ways to be part of the contiguous operation, or the contiguous arc or circle that would encompass the unannexed property. You'd have to have basically property itself meet that status. Likewise, the people that are affected, that is the people that live within the unannexed area, would be entitled to a hearing, and the city would have to prove administratively that it was necessary for these people to come into the city in order to receive certain city sponsored services. So within those parameters, then island annexation could take place. If island annexation did take place pursuant to this hearings process and notice process, then there's a provision in the bill that it would be a 10-year ramp-in of the additional property taxes. Now, Representative Farr has a deferral of property taxes, probably based upon the income of the property owners in the annexed area. My idea is a little bit differently. It's just a 10% phase-in per year over time. But at least it has the effect of mitigating the island annexation, particularly when it occurs without a vote of the people and pursuant to the standards which I have drafted. So I think that this gives the committee some new issues to look at with respect to island annexation in the next session, and I would urge the adoption of LC 1245 as a committee bill for that purpose. So happy to ask questions.
Representative Greenlight.
Thank you. Representative Ackerman, I love obviously where this is going, as you know. And can I ask a couple of questions? Is the term clear and convincing evidence a term of art that's clearly understood?
It's truly understood in that, and I can give you an example, particularly in the, it comes obviously from the legal field. It defines a standard of proof for the quantity of proof that must be necessary to come to a conclusion. The lowest, of course, would be some form of a possibility. The next form would be by a preponderance of the evidence, greater than one-half the evidence. Clear and convincing would be the next standard, and beyond a reasonable doubt, which is a criminal standard, would be the highest standard of proof. So I have set this relatively high, I suppose, because the people within in the proposed annexed area would probably not have a right to vote under this proposal, but there could be a trade-off.
May I follow up, Chair? Beaverton argues that in our district that there are two services that are left out.
Mm-hmm.
One is the they argue that the expanded sheriff patrol of one per, I don't know, 1,000, I'm not sure what that number is, as opposed to 1.5 as the standard in the city, would be an essential urban service. The other thing they argue is that planning is an essential urban service. Could Beaverton argue that the only way to get adequate police protection and adequate planning services, whatever that would be reason enough to argue for this annexation?
I think it's sort of a de minimis argument. I think that in an unannexed area, you still have police services through the sheriff's department. You still have county planning. And a lot of the county planning, at least in Eugene, county planning has been ceded to the city already.
That's
under the metropolitan plan. The city is the repository of all planning, and that's why they're going into the unannexed areas and forcing annexation as a condition to giving building permits. With respect to city services, as to whether they have one officer per 10,000 people or 15,000 people, I don't know the answer to that numerically, but I know that through intergovernmental agreements, that's how they're working it out. And in fact, right now, they claim that there's a difficulty in how you provide services, but they don't know whether to send the sheriff out or the city police out. but I have had experience calling emergency services. As long as I give them an address, they know exactly where it is because they have computers like everybody else. So I think the technology is taking care of those arguments.
Mr. Chair, I assume as we handle this in the regular session that that's the time to make the record on intent on some of these issues rather than at this point. And I certainly commend Representative Ackerman for moving this so substantively. Such a
well, it's been stated it's a Hail Mary pass by the outgoing quarterback, so...
I shall return. in some form.
Any further questions of Representative Ackerman?
Second string quarterback, is that?
Yeah. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
Ms. Ludwig, you wanted to speak on this subject? Well, the committee has not had any prior discussion on this particular bill, so I think it appropriate if you would like to come forth and speak.
Mr. Chair, may I request a visual aid, the whiteboard?
Certainly.
Thank you. Thank you for the unexpected opportunity to provide a couple of comments. Linda Ludwig, League of Oregon Cities, on LC 45. I will limit my comments, I believe, to LC 45, but try to put... Pardon me?
1245. Some number 45.
1245. But I'd like to put them in an overall context. Mr. Seabury was a guest at the annexation work group for several meetings, and it was very nice to have him there. And we did hear a lot about the situation, the concerns in the Santa Clara area. It is complex. Situation, as many of these situations in annexation are. And let me start by just drawing a diagram. In some degree, I hope you can read my scribble. It's more complex in Eugene Springfield area because the layers of regulation are more complex there dealing with annexations than they are in any other place of the state.
Linda, is that caused because it is the only boundary commission in the state?
Yes. It is the only boundary commission left in the state of Oregon. It's complicated because about 30 years ago, more than 30 years ago, 36 years ago now, the state required cities and counties to have a 20-year land supply within their comprehensive plans. So when Eugene Springfield adopted theirs, and it included the Santa Clara area, that happened with the initial comprehensive plan adoption and recognition by DLCD. We also have the Boundary Commission in the Eugene area, in Santa Clara area. We also have what's called the Metro Plan. And cities have comprehensive plans as well. Also, with this issue, which has been going on for quite some time, there is currently a stakeholder process dealing with the Santa Clara area. So you have a lot of involvement in regulatory arenas, as well as concerned stakeholders. Now, The largest perspective you could say is that this has become highly political because these, as you heard appropriately so, a lot of the concerns are with the elderly population in this area, Santa Clara. That area was brought into the UGB over 30 years ago, and it was brought into the UGB as part of its 20-year land supply requirement to develop at urban levels of development. So it was anticipated a long time ago that that area would be urbanized at urban levels of development. And it's taken quite some time for that process to hit that area, and has mostly occurred when landowners have requested annexation. Now, why did they do that? Some of them had failing sewer systems, septic systems, excuse me. Some of them simply wanted to recap additional value to their property and their home, as they do receive when they're annexed into city limits. So you look at the map of Santa Clara and within the area, and you do see an area that most has a lot of contiguousness with properties that have been brought into the city. But at this point in time, it looks a little Swiss cheese-like. I will very much say that. We've seen the map in the work group. So it's a highly charged situation because you have an elderly population on fixed incomes that were, to some degree, some of them involved in the stakeholder process 30 years ago when this land was brought into the UGB, have not subsequently been annexed yet, and at this point in time are concerned about coming into the city. Yes, the property taxes are going to increase to some degree. Will they receive more services? That's going to depend on a property-by-property basis with the services that they now receive. What doesn't get talked a lot about is that when property comes into the city, values go up. And so I think that's something in this whole situation in Santa Clara, as we look forward in LCs and legislation, we have concerns with elderly population paying more taxes, but those values will go up, property values will go up, and there are property owners within the Santa Clara area that want to take advantage of that, as well as property owners that do not want to pay more taxes. So it's kind of a broad spectrum piece there. In terms of LC 1245, I look at this as some placeholder language. Would very much like to continue to work with Representative Ackerman, with our constituents and the work group, with our constituents, my constituents in the Eugene area, to see if we could find some modification to some of this language that wouldn't have necessarily unintended consequences to other places where island annexation would be appropriately used. Just a couple of concerns and just another point. In sub 5, where we have the phase-in of property tax rates, cities currently have that available. That's available to us by statute. We can phase in property tax rates over a 10-year period of time.
Has that been done anywhere?
It's been done in many, many places, both with residential property, commercial, and industrial property owners. The way it's laid out here as a particular requirement, and even in the language that it's laid out by, I believe it could be problematic not only for cities but for taxpayers as well. So I have some concerns with that and wanted to point that out to you. The couple of the pieces, I believe Representative Greenlick asked about the standard of clear and convincing evidence and what that means. Typically, in land use lingo and in statutes, we see the standard of clear and objective evidence. This is a slightly different standard,
And I'm not as certain as Representative Ackerman is that it has the clarity that it would need to have without bringing forward more litigation in terms, subsequent litigation in terms of what that language might mean. Also, again, my biggest concern with what we see in Santa Clara and what we see elsewhere is that under this language, if a property was currently being served by all services, and there are many islands that are currently not in city limits, such as in the city of Hillsborough, property owners that receive the full gamut of services that wanted to be annexed because it would result in an increase in their property value, could not be under this language annexed under an island annexation methodology, which would be the easiest way for a city to bring them in.
Any questions? Ms. Ludwig. Representative Ackerman.
Yes, if I could just make a statement. I thought Ms. Ludwig said that, you could correct me if I'm wrong, that in the Santa Clara area you would want to annex in order to obtain sewer services. Is that your statement?
I believe that there were some, Mr. Chair, Representative Ackerman, in some of those pieces of property there were some failing septic systems at one point in time.
The history, Mr. Chairman, is that, and again, I live in the River Road area, which is contiguous to Santa Clara, so we have the same issues. Several years ago, the city was unable, City of Eugene, was unable to annex voluntarily at such a rate that it was in jeopardy of losing a substantial amount of federal money. So without a vote of the people, it set up about, 13 special taxing districts in Santa Clara and in River Road area. Without a vote of the people, it exercises extraterritorial jurisdiction and imposes sewers upon Santa Clara and River Road in its entirety. Okay, the assessments that people receive for sewers based upon the formulation established by the city ran roughly from over $3,000, and we saw some up into the $20,000 range. Some people actually lost their houses because they could not afford to pay the sewer assessments. So my point being, not only was Eugene overreaching at that point, but the fact is that the entire area is under sewers now. There's no reason to annex to obtain sewers because they've already been imposed upon us.
And just another comment about that, Mr. Chair, Representative Ackerman. I believe that was the last health hazard annexation that we'd seen in the state.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but
please.
I'm very familiar with the, with that. I led the several rate there, several property owners in litigation involving a number of these points that speak from that perspective. This was not a health hazard annexation. The city obtained some language from DEQ that in some areas septic tanks were failing, and some wells indicated that that was true, but some of the wells were also picking up effluent that was from the Willamette River, and I'm not going to get into all that right now, but it was not a statutory health hazard type annexation. That it would have led to a health hazard, I think, yes, the prediction was then it would have been around the year 2010 when they would reach that threshold. This annexation process took place. I might ask Mr. Seabury for the date on that, but it seems it was the late 80s history. So thank you for allowing me to make that clarification.
Thank you, Representative. Any other questions from the committee? Linda, I just wanted to make one comment, because I hear a lot about the escalating property values. But for many seniors, for many disabled, the only way that they ever benefit from an escalation of property taxes is when they sell their home. And they don't want to sell their home. Seniors especially. That's where they want to live until they die. And so the escalating property taxes really do come back to be quite a burden on a fixed income for a senior. So just wanted to make that part of the record, but thank you. We appreciate you being here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also share those concerns for all of us. And that's one of the reasons that I put here, are we talking about changes to tax law also, or some sort of kind of cap there? I believe what we see in Santa Clara, not just as apples and oranges to some degree, but is really a fruit basket that needs some attention to be teased out so that we can come up, hopefully, with some appropriate solutions that will help the full range of what we see.
Well, I think we're all looking forward to the fact that, as you earlier mentioned, this will be a placeholder piece of legislation that gets the Santa Clara issue into the next session of the legislature, which is, I think, what we'd all like to have is a good, healthy discussion on this and the appropriate action taken.
It's duly noted, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you for being here, Linda. Committee, if there is there any further discussion on LC 1245?
We have a work group or we have a public hearing or work group?
We have a work group.
Okay.
Motion's yeah. Already on the table.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative.
Are we in work session?
Yes, we are.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'd like to say something about this, if it's okay with you, Mr.
Now
Chair.
Now is the time, Representative.
Seems inevitable that we end up with some problem children in the state of Oregon. But the one thing we don't realize when we pass laws that blanket the whole state of Oregon, we're beating up on 238 other municipalities that haven't done a doggone thing. This system is not good for Medford. I represent Medford. We go once a year and do island annexations. Once every 10 years, I'm sorry. Once every 10 years. It's all voluntary. It all has to be contiguous to the city. And you apply. And it does increase your value. In fact, some are fivefold because of property. So therefore, I can't support this because we're beating the tar out of 238 innocent municipalities to the expense of two. If this were specific to Eugene, I would vote for it. So just wanted to say that.
Mr. Chair, may I comment?
Yes, Representative.
I mean, this is an area that I've looked at. I don't think there's anything in here that talks about, A, either voluntary annexation, or B, island annexations as we really meant them. A city surrounds 12 properties, and you just ought to annex those 12 properties. I mean, that makes sense. Basically, what we're talking about here, and I have a slightly different version of it, we'll commend, is simply to prevent these cherry stem annexations of streets, creating an artificial island, and then using that street annexation to create not 5 or 10 or 20 lots, but in some cases 1,000 lots that can then be annexed with, 1,000 homes that can then be annexed without those people's permission. I mean, so it is a relatively narrow annexation. It's not intended to beat up on those 238, is that the number?
There's 240 municipalities. So when a couple of them step out of line, then we try to blanket all of them.
There are actually more that step out of line in this way, that are using cherry stem annexation to create artificial islands. But I don't sense that's what you're talking about Medford doing, is it?
We do not do that.
I mean, and this wouldn't affect anything except that.
Well, but see, excuse me, Mr. Chair, can we have a discussion? We're having a discussion here. So
I've gotten into trouble in the past giving Representative Greenlick a green light for a discussion.
This is part of this committee.
It was my colleague from the South.
And the Northern colleague.
I will allow a limited discussion.
But see, what I'm seeing here is that we always take the necessary step and we always try to prohibit people. And there are parts and times when cherry annexation's okay.
Oh, yeah.
There are times when that is okay. I don't think we have not, to my knowledge, created an island by doing so in Medford in the last 10 years at least. But what happens in the event that we do and these 10 years come up, what do we do then? We're back to this. And even if it infills, we're back to this. So I just don't think that prohibiting local government from functioning well is our job. If they're doing fine, then we should leave them alone. If they aren't, like Eugene and Beaverton, then we need to step in if it's something that we feel some misuse. Are most of the municipalities misusing this? I don't think so.
Representative Greenlick, I'll give you a quick rebuttal.
Thank you.
That's
fine. See, I think I have self-control.
He was on my TV show, so he's been pretty nice to me, you know?
Damn, well, that's an outside influence the committee is.
I'm waiting for the residuals.
Okay. Representative Ackerman has moved that LC 1245 be introduced as a committee bill. Will the clerk call the roll?
Ackerman?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Esquivel?
No.
Jensen?
Aye.
Sumner?
Aye.
Chair Gerard?
Chair votes aye. LC 1245 will be introduced as a committee measure. We will now open reopen our work session on LC 1445. And committee, this is one that we've been dealing with for the entire interim. And it's undergone last-minute surgery that was very necessary. I'll ask Don Schellenberg to come forward in that. Don, we don't want you to read 1445 to us.
Well, I'm disappointed.
Despite the fact that we love your voice and, you know, all that kind of thing. But would you advise the committee of the changes that have occurred in this draft since we first received it?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Don Schellenberg, representing Oregon Farm Bureau. Yes, when I read through the draft, and I'll have to admit I didn't read every page of this draft, the significant changes in the draft are in the first 15 pages, and after that it's pretty much whatever other changes they have to make because of the changes you made in the first 15 pages. The basic thing that's going on here with this draft is we're moving the decisions regarding administrative rules and the implementation, the interpretation of the goals and guidelines down one notch. Right now, all the administrative rules are developed at the state level. And Representative Esquivel was talking about one size doesn't fit all is essentially what he was saying in the previous discussion here, and that's a comment that has been heard throughout the state. And so the concept simply is you bring it down, you create regional commissions, you leave a state LCD, a state commission in place, and their responsibilities are basically management of the goals and guidelines, because you still need some overarching goals and guidelines, and their review of the administrative rules that the regional commissions would, how they would interpret the goals and guidelines. So then you have the regional commissions, you'd have one commission in each of the five regions. But there's a lot of options here. This is, I see this more as a placeholder than an actual finished product. But you could have seven regions if you wanted, or you could have nine or whatever you want. But sticking with the existing five is the way we drafted, just for simplicity's sake. You would have the five commissions and how they would come into place. Right now, the governor appoints the commissions, the commission members at the state. The way this bill designs it, the commissions at the local level would be appointed by the governor. Now, there's different options there, too. You could elect them in your region. You could, one representative from each of the regions, or in that region, could get together and accumulate a list of suggestions, and they could forward those to the governor, and the governor appoint off of that list. Or it could be done, the list could be accumulated by the county, one county commissioner from each of the counties in the region. There's just different, or you could elect them outright. So there's just kind of different options that can be done with a lot of this, but suffice it to say, you have like a 7-member commission in each of the regions, and they go about interpreting the goals and guidelines and that would apply to their region. And then you go down one step from that, and really nothing changes beyond that, except that the county, at the local level, the cities and the counties are comprehensive plans. They would, over time, depending on how the regional commissions interpret the goals and guidelines, they may need to change their county comprehensive plan, or they may want to change it. And so the whole concept really is to bring this down one notch, get it one notch closer to the people. Measure 37 was a shot across the bow regarding our land use planning system. It needs some changes, and it needs to be brought down to a level where the people feel like they have some ownership in it, or where they have access to it. Right now, when you have administrative rules changes, there's one hearing and in one place in the state. And it makes it hard for the general public to be a part of that. Now to your question, Mr. Chair. Sorry about that.
No, that was good, Don. Yeah.
The change actually occurs on page 2 and page 15. And the change is the way the bill was originally drafted here, the state LCDC continued to review the local government comprehensive plan. And it was our thought that the comprehensive plans ought to be reviewed by the regional commission. And so the change here simply removes the language from the state on LCDC and gives that responsibility to the regional commission. Just one other comment about we retain the state LCDC. Who becomes the state LCDC? And the way this is drafted, and our view was that when the regional commissions are organized, they elect their own chair, and the chairs of each of those commissions become the state LCDC. That way you have some accountability all the way from the top, all the way from the top down. And there you go, Mr. Chair. That's the only change, I believe.
Can I just ask a quick clarification? So you said that the regional commissions, they could be the people of that region would decide how those members would be appointed to that commission, where they were. No. Did I hear that wrong,
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Administrator? We haven't said how that's going to happen.
Okay, so it's still a hypothetical, yeah. Then. Okay, yeah. Thank you. That's why it wasn't clear.
Yeah. Representative Jensen.
I'm wondering how you get this by a governor's veto if we're going to take away from him the power to appoint here.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Jensen, you can view it by that you're taking away some responsibility from him. He would still have, in our view, somebody would put forth a list of people that he would choose from. And right now he chooses from a list that's accumulated by his office. And in this case, we're suggesting that that list could be accumulated by either, again, the representatives from that region or the commissioner, one county commissioner from each of the counties in that region. We haven't set how that would happen, but he would still have the authority to do the appointment just from a list developed more locally than from the governor's office.
Mr. Chair, I'm referring more to the state board than the other. If they're going to come just from the chairs of the... I expect if I were governor, I would be somewhat inclined to view that pessimistically.
And thank you, Representative Jensen. Don't have an answer for you. That's just a political issue we'll have to deal with. That's the only answer I can give you at this point.
I think it's interesting. The original bill was introduced in the last session. Had no opposition whatsoever, and sailed through the House Committee on Land Use.
and then got lost somewhere. Am I correct there, Don?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. It got lost in the Budget Committee, in the House Budget Committee.
Yeah. Don, did you want to discuss page 15? Or did you?
Mr. Chairman, page 15, the difference there was that it removes the responsibility of review of county comprehensive plans from the state LCD. It removes it there, and then it inserts it over here on page 2 under the regional commissions.
Subsection 2, sub.
Okay. I want to make that.
Okay.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members, I'll just clarify that the language that's being inserted in section 2 sub 6 is also being deleted from section 6 sub 2, that the parts that are being removed that are being added later are subsections D and E, I believe. Is that correct? Something like that. That's where the language is coming. It's being inserted into section 2. Yeah. It's being deleted from section 6,
right.
Subsection 2. That's the change.
Any further comments, Don?
Just, Mr. Chairman, appreciate you and the committee's interest in work on the bill. Thank you.
Are there any questions of Mr. Schellenberg? Seeing none, you did a good job.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Esquivel.
Yes, Mr. Chair. First of all, I think this is great. This is a good bill. Mr. Chair, I move that LC 1445, dated October 16th, be introduced as a committee bill.
Representative Esquivel moves that LC 1445, dated October 16th, be introduced as a committee bill. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Representative Barr.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, and I don't know whether I'm going to be able to read this whole thing for one thing, but I still have some concerns. I mean, I just in my mind, I'm seeing more government, I'm seeing more layers. I almost see more problems than a solution. But I'm certainly willing to vote to introduce this and let the conversation go forward.
I might comment that as chair of this committee, the last two sessions plus the interims, we have traveled to every part of the state, from Hermiston to Klamath Falls to Portland,
Gold Beach,
wherever we went, the message to us was one size doesn't fit all. And I think of all the legislation that I've seen, this bill addresses that problem in that it may not reduce the bureaucracy, but it moves the bureaucracy from the state to local officials. And I believe that's where our land use decisions need to be made, is that the local decision by local people, not by Salem and those that reside here. So, I agree with you, Representative Beyer. Again, nothing seems to be changing faster in this state right now than land use. I think this is a great bill to begin with, and that it will open up the door to discussion. And we obviously are looking at an election which could change one way or other the state direction of many things in this regard. So I think getting it in the hopper at this point is good, and that because it'll be on the table to discuss when the legislature returns. So I agree with you on that. Representative Greenlee.
Can I ask you a question, sir? Do you know whether this is, whether the big look, whatever it's called now, is taking this tack as well? Will that come out of that group as well to move some more local?
We will send a copy of this bill, as we will with all land use bills that we move out of this committee for pre-filing. We will send a copy with a cover letter to the Big Look Committee. And as you know, I've been a critic of the Big Look in that it takes way too long, It would be 2011 before the legislature ever even began to look at anything. And I don't think we can afford to wait that long.
I think there is still legislature.
Measure 37. Yeah. I'm waiting for a ballot measure that term limits LCDC, and I can't find that anywhere.
Mr. Chair, just...
Representative Byer.
Thank you. Just one more quick comment, and I think I made this before. It almost seems ironic to me, though, that we're introducing one bill that basically tries to move local decisions into a state arena, and another one that wants to take decisions from the state and move it into a local arena. So every once in a while, I start feeling a little schizophrenic in this committee.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative.
At least I'm consistent.
You're the only one.
Yes.
I do think that this bill gets this, and I had the opportunity to speak to Jim Eisenhardt. He was our planner in Medford for 28 years, and he just recently passed away. But he told me, he said, I started in 1970, whatever it was, and he said we had a three-ring binder. Three-ring binders was the extent of land use laws in the state of Oregon. He said today, and he had about a 20-by-20 office, he said you could fill this office clear to the ceiling and go down the hall, clear to the ceiling, with land use rules that I defy you to find someone in the state of Oregon that knows all those rules. One person. We've created a monster here in the aspect that we have not checked on the chicken coop. We've gotten a point where Salem is dictating to Lakeview what they need to be doing. They're dictating to Ontario, to Portland, and it may fit in one place, but it certainly won't fit in the other two. So I think this gives people an opportunity, and DLCDC, in my opinion, just my opinion, should be a broad-based policy-making body only, and local municipalities and counties should have jurisdiction and flexibility to have their own land use underneath that umbrella. So I think this is a step in the right direction.
Thank you from the most consistent member of this committee. We appreciate that. Any further discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Ackerman?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Esquivel?
Aye.
Jensen?
Aye.
Sumner?
Aye.
Chair Girard?
Chair votes aye. And LC 1445 is pre-filed as a committee bill. And we will close the work session on LC 1445. Have a couple housekeeping things to do. First of all, Representative Greenlick, while not an actual member of this committee, I think has attended every meeting during the interim. And we thank you, Representative, for your interest and your contributions to the committee from that viewpoint.
Thank you for inviting me.
I'd also like, this being our final meeting, I'd like to thank Pat and Mike. Pat and Mike, that's good. Thank Pat and Mike for their outstanding job. Especially Pat had to step in on the shoes of Joe, who started with us and then left. And those were very big shoes to fill. And Pat just did a wonderful job, and this committee thanks that. Now, there's one other item that I have that's somewhat personal, but since I've been on this committee as its chair for 4 years, I'm going to lose one of the people off this committee that has just been a great member of this committee, and he's a man I trust, outstanding legislator, and I'm going to miss him, and I'd like to just give Representative Ackerman a reflection of my personal feelings.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and as an expression of your personal feelings, maybe I shouldn't read this. I do appreciate the opportunity to serve, and I do think that we made a lot of bipartisan progress in the last years on this committee. I think the things that we did today illustrate a lot of the thoughts that have come through your leadership, and it's been a pleasure to work with everyone on this committee, including the staff and members of the audience that come forward as witnesses. So thank you again.
Our pleasure. We'll miss you. We'll miss you. hereby adjourn the House Interim Committee on Land Use.
Next thing you know, Ackerman will be the LCB.
John, thank you.
Legislative Council reminds me that as drafted, still the governor does do the appointments of the bills drafted.
Yeah, we must have missed that because it was on page one.
I drifted off into what our concepts are.
I think those would be great points for discussion, John, as we go forward in this.
I'm sure.